Hi, and welcome to the Macro Show. We talk macro, and you wonder, is this money destruction as bad as it was during the great financial crisis? No, but it's pretty close. And what does that mean? That's right, it means lower interest rates. We've got that. We're going to look at the base effects of the Consumer Price Index and why the CPI is likely peaking this month. We've got commitment traders reports, dealer inventories. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter. Let's get right into today's headline topic. And here we have loans and leases and bank credit. Now, remember, we looked at the hard data on Friday, but the Fred database did not have the charts updated. And here we can see that all loans and leases at commercial banks are contracting at a rate of minus 3.28% from this time last year. And we can see that, wow, that you know, it's fairly severe compared to, say, the great financial crisis. But is it as bad as things look? Yes, it is pretty bad. This is the second largest contraction in the loans and leases data going all the way back to the early 1970s. But what about in dollar amounts? What does that mean in dollar amounts? Well, if we look at from this time last year, it's down, in terms of billions, $376.6 billion. Now, that's a lot of money. And one thing we understand is money is created when a new loan is originated. So money enters in the economy, and as the principal payments are made, either as a lump sum or as part of the recurring monthly payments, money is destroyed. So when we see a contraction, well, we know money is being destroyed. So $376 billion from this time last year is no more. Now, what does that mean in terms of the money supply and interest rates? Well, you know, this is something we talked about last week when I did that special on Dr. Lacey Hunt's research report, where he talked about how, hey, interest rates tend to bottom well after the recession, and they go down in between. Now, of course, we haven't seen the Fed do QE at the long end of the curve when all a credit contraction is occurring. But nevertheless, I'm sure we'll see fairly low interest rates, if not likely new all-time low interest rates, especially due to the massive speculative short positioning on the long bond that we've talked quite a bit about. And so here you can see that a deceleration in credit outright contraction, well, if you look at treasury yields, here's a 30-year at the same time, where does it end up leading to? Lower rates every time. And you can see that here we see this deceleration turn into a contraction, and this rise here is likely to get reversed, because how do you spur credit creation? I mean, how do you get people to go out and borrow money? Is it with higher yields? No, it's with lower interest rates. And we can see that, you know, in the data now, people are getting their stimulus checks, paying off debt. Yeah, they're spending the money, but they're paying off debt. And now we're seeing it in the hard data, where this is massive contraction here. Now let's take a look at this when compared to the M2 money supply. Now the M2 is here in red. Now keep in mind, this dark black line here is a zero bar for the loans and leases. The zero bar for the M2 is at the bottom. So it doesn't contract, but what I want you to see is how, as loans and leases decelerate, that it puts downward pressure on the growth rate of the money supply. So the money supply over here was growing at a rate of, looks like probably around 12%, and then down to near zero. So here's a deceleration in loans and leases, deceleration in the money supply, and deceleration in both. Or a deceleration in the loans and leases to outright contraction, deceleration in the money supply. And now we're seeing this up here, where we're seeing now an outright contraction in loans and leases, but yet the money supply is going up. Now we know why the money supply is going up. It's due to all these fiscal transfers from non-M2 sources, so money outside of the U.S. commercial banking system coming into the U.S. commercial banking system. So what does this mean in terms of, you know, inflation and inflation expectations? Now you remember, to get out of a liquidity trap, what do we need? We need the M2, so the supply of money, to grow more proportionally than the demand for money, demand being the monetary base. And so what happens is we need to get out of this. We need the M2 to go up, 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 up as fast as it can. But when you have a negative impact on it, which QE is one of them, but now you have an outright credit contraction, what does that tell you? It's going to put downward pressure on the growth rate of the money supply, making it very, very difficult to get out of this liquidity trap. Now, we hear a lot about how inflation is just going to go crazy. But in reality, it's likely that April is going to be the peak, possibly May, in the year-over-year rate of change. So if you look at the CPI from a year ago, April is most likely the peak. Now, let me show you this, because you've heard the Fed talk about how this is probably transitory. I know we hear the Fed say transitory a lot, but this one's they're pretty right about. So let me show you the consumer price index. And this is the month-to-month change. This is not the year-over-year change, but the month-to-month change. And if we go back to a year ago, well, let me show you this first. If we zoom out the month-over-month, you'll notice it doesn't drop below zero very often. And when it does, it rebounds pretty quick. So the zero bar here is pretty important. So let's go back and look at the five-year window here. And what happened? Well, now we go back to March of last year, and the month over month went down. And then we go down to April, and it went down even more. So this is what you call the base effect, because the year-over-year rate of change from April, which is this month, which we'll get the data next month, is coming from a very low point, the lowest point in 5 years, meaning that anything up here is going to make the year-over-year rate of change go up. But what's going to happen after that? Well, look at May. It now comes back pretty quick, and you can get the view that by May, the year-over-year rate of change is going to slow down, maybe even decelerate from April, but look what happens by June. So in order for the year-over-year rate of change in June of this year to be, say, over 2%, it's going to have to be a very large print, and the odds of that happening are low. That's why, you know, the Fed has made it clear we're not taking our foot off the pedal. This is how you know that by June, at the latest, we should start seeing disinflation in the consumer price index. In order to get it, we need to see a massive, massive increase in food and energy and all kinds of other prices, which so far we're not seeing in the data. I mean, if we were to go look at, say, you know, crude oil, for example, and I'm looking at the dollar, which is tagged as 100-day moving average, kind of hit an air pocket there from its 50-day. But look at crude. Is crude any higher here to say that energy prices are going to keep driving higher to spur inflation by June? Well, nothing here so far in the data to suggest that at all. So now, you know, when you hear about these base effects in the CPI, now you know exactly what we're talking about. Now I want to look at the primary dealer inventory data. We tried to look at that on Friday, and then we'll go and take a look at how dealers are positioned and how hedge funds are positioned in the futures market, because that speculative money can drive, you know, different asset classes up and down. And it's still interesting to me that we see these big shorts on the bond market, because when you look at the dealer positioning, something doesn't make sense. And I don't know if this is because they've loaned out, you know, got a lot of loans out on their bonds, why they're holding short. But look at T-bill inventory. This is as of Thursday of last week. And we see that, this is Thursday from the week before. T-bills are down 25 billion. I mean, they've been just steadily, you know, dropping their T-bill inventory down. But how about if we go to coupons? You know, they've got a lot of 2 years, but yeah, the 2 year inventory has been fairly flat, around 44, 45 billion. But look at the 2 to 3 year, they went negative. So, you know, we can kind of get some prediction that we knew that 3 year auction was going to be strong because they had a lack of inventory. Now we go out to the 5 year. They don't have that much inventory. I mean, you're talking 6-7 billion, and, you know, just back in February, early February, they had 22 billion. Look at, you know, the 7 year. I mean, these auctions are terrible, but dealers are sitting on 1.3 billion. I mean, not much. How about the 10 year? 756 million. And even you go out to the 20 and 30 year, which is represented out here on the 11 year plus. And this has slowly been going down from, say, a peak of almost 55 billion, you know, to 36. So, you know, from a dealer perspective, you know, when I look at the commitment of traders report and I look at the bond part, what would I likely expect to see? I expect them to see backing off their shorts because they just don't have a big inventory. But yet that's not exactly what we're seeing. So let's go here into the CFTC data. And you can see here is the long bond, and they actually increased their dealers increased their short positions of long bond by over 10%. So over 10,000 contracts, which is quite a bit. Even hedge funds added a bit to theirs, not much. They had a small amount. If we go to the ultra 30. Dealers backed off some of their short positions a little bit, and had, while hedge funds added. And we keep looking the 2-year, right? You think, why would they hold a, you know, okay, the 2-year? They should have a short position because of their inventory levels, but they increase their short position by, you know, more than 10%. It seems like, why are dealers holding these massive short positions? You know, and that is, I'm not sure of that answer, but we see hedge funds backed off their short positions by about 25,000 contracts. So they were net neutral between that and the dealers. Look at the 10-year. Hedge funds added 11,000 contracts. Not a big number because they're already sitting on 600,000 short contracts. And the dealers dropped a little bit, and dealers dropped a little of the ultra 10, or added a little of the ultra 10, as did with hedge fund managers. But this is interesting. The five-year note, which is not a popular auction, you know, at all. Dealers dropped 63,000 contracts, which is substantial. Hedge funds dropped 103, so a big drop on the 5-year. No color as to why that is. But let's head over here to our buddy Stefan from Skyway Asset Management. He pulls the Treasury bond futures across the board, and he sees that in terms of net long and short, there's not a real big change, only a small decrease. And he likes to send us this chart. I know many of you enjoy it, where he shows the total long and short. And here we can see that the total longs backed off just a little bit, just as his other chart showed. But otherwise, in his book, and this based on his research, this is telling us there is a bottom in here, which occurs generally when the dealers start, or when there is an overall net long in those positions. Let's take a look at Hedgeopia here and see, we should have some validation. 10-year treasury, they went, looks like slightly reversal, some of their longs just were slightly net long. And the 30-year, virtually unchanged. So let's get into some of this other stuff. Now we've got WTI futures, West Texas Intermediate, down a little bit. Now we know that speculators are play a role here, but they're backing off their longs as what are we seeing in the charts? We're not seeing oil making new highs here. So maybe they're saying, hey, maybe this is as far as it goes for a while. And you're seeing a little profit taking, backing off some of their speculative positions. How about the S&P 500? No real change, still net short slightly. How about the euro? Remember, the euro is, you know, the biggest opposite end of the trade weighted dollar, and unchanged here, but still, if you look at speculative positioning here, it suggests that the euro is likely to head lower. That should be dollar bullish at some point. Gold, we see a little back off of the longs a little bit from last week, not much. Still, gold is on a downward trend. Let's take a look at the NASDAQ, still net short there. Russell 2000, still net short there. And the dollar unchanged. Well, actually, dollar went up a little bit, unchanged, you know, compared to the 3 weeks before last week. But, you know, dollar, as we just kind of looked at that chart momentarily, we'll pull that up again. I was wanting to see, you know, from a bullish perspective, it hold its 50-day moving average, but it just hit an air pocket, plunged straight down, hit the 100-day moving average. So we'll see if the dollar can get some strength here or if it heads back down to 90.50. And then we'll go back and take a look at the VIX, and they increase their short positions on the VIX a little bit. You know, the VIX is telling us there's just no risk in this market. I mean, there's some, but I mean, if you look at, you know, the amount of people that are short the VIX, and then you actually go and look at the positioning of where the VIX is at, and you go like, where, you know, people are not worried at all about, you know, the risk in this market at all. I mean, the VIX is telling you this is largely a risk-free market, until, of course, as we know, that it's not. And that's where, of course, the danger comes. So overall, and oh, by the way, I want to thank all the Excel wizards who sent me, reached out after the Sunday night chart show and said, hey, here's how to make, you know, your charts look good. I appreciate that. I made the changes. I'll be on deck for next Sunday, of course. Anyways, I appreciate all of you being fans. Be sure to like, you know the deal. Be sure to subscribe. Thanks for supporting the channel. It really means everything to me. And we'll see you on Wednesday for the Macro Show. I'm Steve Van Meter. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information only. It is not intended to provide investment or other advice. This show is not to be construed as recommendation or solicitation to buy or sell any security, a financial product, instrument, or to participate in any particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter. Personal capacity opinions expressed this video that I do not reflect the view of Atlas Financial Advising or Steve Van Meter Financial.